Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. Around 20 minutes packed with global news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. A quick message first of all to all TaxCast listeners. I know you're out there listening in over 130 countries now, but I'd love some feedback from you on why you listen. If you catch it on the radio, tell me which one. Let me know your thoughts. Drop me an email on naomi@taxjustice.net. Tell me if you want to subscribe to the TaxCast email list so you'll never miss a TaxCast. It'd be great to hear from you. And here's a roundup of the Tax Justice news this month. Egypt has rejected progressive taxation as a social justice tool enshrined in law because it'll deter investors. That and a million other things make you wonder what the Arab Spring was for. The Tax Justice Network's Financial Secrecy Index for 2013 is out. It's the biggest ever survey of global financial secrecy. If you want to see if your country features, go to www.financialsecrecyindex.com. But for a quick flavour of the movers and the shakers, Switzerland's still at number one, the US is number six, Hong Kong and Singapore have risen up the list this year, and Lebanon is a surprise newcomer to the top 10. This month, Tax Justice Network Israel was launched, a country that really needs some tax justice. According to a report a couple of years ago, it loses about $857 million a year just from 25 leading Israeli corporations listed on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange. It looks like there are some big prosecutions on the way. A US court has allowed US tax authorities to issue special summonses called John Doe summonses. It means Citibank, Mellon, JP Morgan Chase, HSBC, and the Bank of America will have to provide data on undisclosed accounts in the Bahamas, Barbados, Cayman Islands, Guernsey, Hong Kong, Malta, Switzerland, and the United Kingdom. There must be a lot of people shaking in their shoes. Remember the oil tanker that spilled 60,000 tonnes of oil and sank off the Spanish coast back in 2002? No, neither do most people. 11 years later, a Spanish court's just ruled no one's to blame for the $5 billion worth of damage. It's an interesting example of how international shipping works. The ship was flying the flag of the Bahamas. It was registered in Liberia by what seems to be a Greek-owned company, insured in the UK, and certified in the United States. And on this month's Roll of Dishonour, accountancy firm Deloitte has been promoting the tax haven of Mauritius to companies wanting to invest in Africa, and Barclays Bank has also been helpfully advising on how to strip Africa and India of tax revenue. Texas Bankers Association and Florida Bankers Association has filed a lawsuit to try to block rules requiring US banks to tell the US tax authority about US accounts held by non-resident aliens earning over $10 a year in interest. That information's due to be passed on to about 70 foreign governments. And JP Morgan's agreed to a record settlement with the US government of $13 billion for mis-selling mortgage securities that helped trigger the 2008 financial crisis. But every cloud has a silver lining. $7 billion of the settlement is tax deductible. And that's this month's roundup. Now we're going to talk to the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen for his take on this month. Okay, John, let's start this month talking about the Financial Secrecy Index of 2013. That's just come out. It puts a whole new spin on the idea of corruption, doesn't it?
Well, if we look at the way the corruption debate has moved over the last 20 years, there's been an extraordinary shift away from pointing fingers at countries in the South and increasingly looking at the countries providing corruption services. And the Financial Secrecy Index shows a completely different world in which secrecy provided by countries like Switzerland and Singapore and Cayman is actually core to the corruption debate, because this is where all the money disappears to. Now, the big stories from the 2013 Financial Secrecy Index are, first of all, very little progress has been made since 2009, when the G8 and G20 committed to tackling tax havens. But at the same time, what we're seeing within the index is the steady growth of tax havens, secrecy jurisdictions in the Far East, particularly Hong Kong and Singapore. They are steadily growing. And I suppose the other big story that came out of the 2013 Financial Secrecy Index is the role of the British tax havens. Although the United Kingdom is not particularly secretive itself, if we added all of those British overseas territories and crown dependencies together, combined them with Britain, then Britain would be by far the biggest player in the global tax haven economy. Tax haven central.
Okay, let's move on to look at this new global standard which the G20 nations are supposed to have agreed that they're going to implement by 2015 at the latest. That's automatic information exchange. We've got some of the usual suspects, haven't we, trying to throw some spanners in the works. So it's really one thing for countries to say they're going to sign up to something, but it's really quite another thing to actually implement it. And we're seeing Luxembourg and Austria saying, we'll play if everybody else does. They're now reminding the European Union that they must reach agreements with non-EU financial hubs like Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Monaco, Andorra and San Marino because they want equal competition.
Needless to say, there are a lot of tax havens around that don't like the idea of automatic information exchange because automatic information exchange will end a lot of the dirty business which they've been transacting very happily for many decades. This is nothing more than an excuse for doing nothing. This clearly indicates that they are absolutely committed to maintaining their tax haven status. And I think that the only response that we can make to this is to describe them for what they are, which is pariah states. They are deliberately damaging other countries. We, civil society, should be taking action to shame Austria and Luxembourg. If necessary, even talk about applying sanctions against them because they are deliberately wrecking attempts at international cooperation.
Right, and Switzerland's up to its own kind of delaying games as well, isn't it? I can just imagine Switzerland in a huddle at a football match or something with teammates Luxembourg and Austria sort of saying, you run that way and we're going to run up the other side. Because when it comes to automatic information exchange, Switzerland's insisting on strict reciprocity, so we'll exchange information with you as long as you agree to exchange with us. And that sounds really reasonable until you look a bit closer, because people or multinational corporations aren't stashing their money in the world's poorer countries. It's quite the opposite. The flow of money is actually going the other way, as Switzerland well knows, and many of the poorer nations just aren't really resourced for this kind of thing.
I think the answer to this is to call their bluff, actually. I can't imagine that many Swiss people are actually opening up bank accounts in Zambia. But I think that if Switzerland genuinely wants reciprocity, they should dip into their pockets and provide some kind of support to the Zambian banks so they have the right processes in place to engage in reciprocal information exchange. I think there's a lot to be said now for just moving ahead, saying automatic information exchange will become the global standard. It should be multilateral, and developing countries, poorer countries, should be given assistance so that they're able to apply automatic information exchange, make use of the information they receive, and at the same time, if reciprocity is being demanded, put into place the appropriate systems to reciprocate.
Right. OK, and let's move on to what should be quite an interesting development. The United Kingdom government has announced that the UK is going to have a public register of the beneficial ownership of companies, in other words, the real owners of companies. Since there's no good economic reasons for not knowing who you're doing business with, this all sounds very good. It's what the Tax Justice Network's been campaigning for, but there are some problems, aren't there?
Well, first of all, on the positive side, I mean, it's very encouraging to hear the British government saying it will lead the way, particularly since Britain has, frankly, been extremely poor in terms of requiring public registration of company ownership details. And even more encouraging, we're hearing from some of the very senior people within the business community in Britain saying that they support this. For example, the head of tax of the Confederation of British Industry has said that creating a public register was a no-brainer. We're hearing similar messages from the head of the British Banking Association saying that he sees no reason why these registers shouldn't be public. And the Institute of Directors also coming out in favour of the public registers of beneficial ownership. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is the detail. We need to be assured that it doesn't allow any of the usual loopholes. And the usual loopholes typically involve that the ownership of this company actually lies with a trust or with another offshore company or with an offshore foundation. That wouldn't take us very much further forward. We need to know who the ultimate beneficial owner is. And at this stage, it's not clear how far the British government will go in the direction of requiring full disclosure of ultimate beneficial ownership.
Right, and the UK overseas territories and Crown dependencies need to sign up as well, don't they?
Well, if it allows for some kind of geographical loophole, which means that the Cayman Islands or Bermuda don't have full disclosure on public record, then inevitably the bad business will gravitate in the direction of Cayman and Bermuda. So no loopholes, please, Mr. Prime Minister. We need to have a full and comprehensive approach to this.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. This month marks 50 years since US President John F. Kennedy was killed in 1963. You hear a lot about his legacy, his politics, and his personal life. What you may not hear so much about is just how clearly he identified the problem of tax havens and corporate tax avoidance. This month, the TaxCast looks at what may have been the last time a US president seriously tried to do something about it. Where
anyone at all? We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin from ABC Radio. Here is a special bulletin from Dallas, Texas. Three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade today in downtown Dallas, Texas. To repeat, in Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at
from Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
What President Kennedy was trying to do was to deal with the whole issue of taxes.
Dr. Jairo Lugo-Akando of Sheffield University.
Make no mistake, he was proposing a comprehensive reform of the tax legislation domestically in a way that would close most of the loopholes to prevent companies from using tax havens to ship their profits abroad. Oh, there was huge opposition by the Nixon and the Republicans.
And here's President Kennedy himself sounding frustrated at attempts to block his reforms. This is a recording from the J.F. Kennedy Library in Boston.
Next, I want to take this opportunity to stress again the importance of the tax bill now before the House of Representatives. An attempt is being made in that House to defeat this bill by sending it back to committee. And if it is killed, we will be abandoning an effort to close off foreign tax havens that drain our jobs and dollars away from our shores. And we will be permitting $630 million a year in taxes due from stockholders and bondholders to go uncollected, which means that those wage earners and small businessmen and others who have their taxes withheld from their salaries and their paychecks must pay more. I hope that every member of the House of Representatives who believes in spreading the tax burden fairly, who wants to improve our balance of payments position, who wants this country to grow and new equipment and new jobs, will support this bill as the best means of achieving these goals today. And I find great difficulty in understanding the position of any political party which makes it a matter of party objective to defeat this bill at this most important time.
Dr. Lugo-Akando,
So President Kennedy was very, very clear about the problems and the dangers posed by tax havens around the world. He actually wanted to close them down. In a memo to Ted Sorensen, his right hand in the government, his chief of staff, he writes to him in a personal memo, you know, we have to get rid of all tax havens because they will have a detrimental effect. Most of these documents are available online for anybody who wants to look at them. They just have to go to the John F. Kennedy Library and click in, and most of the document has been digitalized, and you can see the whole debates, and you can see how important this whole central issue was for President Kennedy.
The United States Revenue Act of 1962 may have been the last serious attempt by a US president to tackle tax havens before the spiraling costs of elections and political party funding seemed to have corrupted politics.
Well, President Kennedy was very aware, and this is another time you have to realize that this was another Democrat Party. This is not the current Democrat Party. In a letter that he writes to his chief of staff, he points out very clearly, saying about the dangers of tax havens. He says to him, in response to some concerns about how we could lose support among private donors to the Democratic Party, let me remind you that the Democratic Party does not rely on corporations for their finances.
President Kennedy's proposals for tax reform were eventually watered down as it went through Congress, and they failed to take on some of his most vital recommendations. And the result was the opposite of what he'd intended. Some researchers argue that the Revenue Act of 1962 actually led to increased use of tax havens, especially by corporations, which facilitated the expansion of the offshore industry worldwide.
To me, you know, my view of the administration of Kennedy was they were very clumsy politically because they were very naive. The ones who he brought into government were very new people, but they were very romantic also because of that.
Idealistic.
And idealistics. And because of that, they really tried to make a change. So he was trying to create a tax system that provided more justice for the majority of people and that leaned towards a policy of redistribution of wealth, more than any other president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and definitely more than since any president after that.
Yes, and it's odd, isn't it, that President Kennedy is sometimes used as a kind of poster child by those who believe in a low tax or a no tax economy, because he did propose a series of tax cuts at the time. But they forget he was also a big advocate of increased government spending and investment to stimulate the economy. But he moved first on tax cuts because he knew he wouldn't get political support for the increased spending. Apparently, he told his chief economic advisor 11 days before he was shot, "First we'll have your tax cut, then we'll have my expenditures programme." The context was very different to today, wasn't it? I mean, he was trying to reform a tax system that hadn't really changed since the Second World War when they were trying to restrain growth.
Let's not forget that President John F. Kennedy inherited from the Eisenhower administration a huge deficit with a problem of balance of payments, a post-war situation trying to pull out from Korea after a disastrous adventure in Korea. I mean, it sounds familiar, doesn't it?
At the Capitol steps, a cluster of dark-clad figures wait for traditional military honors to be accorded the dead president before he is taken into the rotunda to lie in state.
What do you think it teaches us?
That a lot of the problems that we have now have been inherited from not doing what we have to do in terms of tax policy in years. After the death of President Kennedy, especially after the end of President Jimmy Carter's administration and the return of the Republicans to power, issues such as inequality and taxation went completely out of the political debate and the discourse. It's not until 2008, after the financial crisis, that we started to talk about, again, inequality, promoting growth in industry inside the country and addressing issues of redistribution of wealth. And the experience of Kennedy administration shows us we have not addressed the issues that we should have addressed. And I think we need to make it happen by politically activating and mobilizing the forces of society that in the past made possible changes as those proposed by President Kennedy in his tax bill.
You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. For more Taxcasts, go to www.tackletaxhavens.com. And for more information on tax justice worldwide, go to www.taxjustice.blogspot.com. We'll be back on The Taxcast next month.